भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 63, text number 30 through 34. So we'll chant together text number 34, which has a purport. So the word meaning Sri Rudra Uvacha, Lord Shiva said, Tvam, you, he, alone, Brahma, the absolute truth, Param, supreme, Jyoti, light, Gurudam, hidden, Brahmani, and the absolute, Vak, Maye, in the form of language, the Vedas, Yam, Hum, Pashanti, they see, Amala, spotless, Atmanam, Atmana, whose hearts, Akasam, the sky, Kiva, like, Kevalam, pure. Shri Rudra Uvacha, Tvam hi Brahma Param Jyotir, Gurudam Brahmivan Maye, Yam Pashyat Yamalatmanam Na Akasham Iva Kevalam. Shri Rudra Uvacha, Tvam hi Brahma Param Jyotir, Gurudam Brahmivan Maye, Yam Pashyant Yamalat Mana. Akasham Iva Kevalam. Shri Rudra Uvacha, Tvam hi Brahma Param Jyotir, Gurudam Brahmivan Maye, Yam Pashyant Yamalamana. Akasham Iva Kevalam.
Thank you.
Ladies. Translation and purport of Disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Actually, we'll go back and I'll read the verses leading up to this last verse. The last verse begins some prayers by Lord Shiva to Lord Krishna. And as you recall from our previous classes, we had just finished a section where the Shiva Jvara was surrendering to Krishna and offering prayers to Krishna. So in between Shiva Jvara's prayers and Lord Shiva's prayers is Lord Krishna's fight with Banasura, directly fighting with him. So we'll read that description and then we'll read the first of Lord Shiva's prayers. So text 30. Thus addressed the Maheshwara Jvara, bowed down to the infallible Lord and went away. But Banasura then appeared, riding forth on his chariot to fight Lord Krishna. Carrying numerous weapons in his thousand hands, O King, the terribly infuriated demon shot many arrows at Lord Krishna, the carrier of the disc weapon. As Bana continued hurling weapons at him, the Supreme Lord began using his razor-sharp chakra to cut off Banasura's arms as if they were tree branches. Lord Shiva felt compassion for his devotee, Banasura, whose arms were being cut off, and thus he approached Lord Chakrayuda, Krishna, and spoke to him as follows. Lord Sri Rudra said, "You alone are the absolute truth, the supreme light, the mystery hidden within the verbal manifestation of the absolute. Those whose hearts are spotless can see you, for you are uncontaminated like the sky." Purport. The absolute truth is the source of all light and is therefore the supreme light, self-luminous. This absolute truth is explained confidentially in the Vedas and is therefore difficult for an ordinary reader to understand. The following statements quoted by Srila Jiva Goswami from the Gopala Tapani Upanishad show how the Vedic sounds occasionally reveal the absolute. Te hakur upasanam etasya paratmano Govindasya Kila Dara Rino Puri. Purvakanda 17. They, the four Kumaras, said to Brahma, "Please tell us how to worship Govinda, the Supreme Soul, and the foundation of all that exists." Chaitanas Chaitananam. Purvakanda 21. He is the chief of all living beings. And Twamhi Devam Atmavritti Prakasham, Purvakanda 23. One who realizes that supreme Godhead by first realizing one's own self. The great Acharya Jiva Goswami also quotes a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.10.48, Budam Param Brahma Manushya Lingam, which refers to the supreme truth concealed in a human-like form. Since the Lord is pure, why do so many people perceive Krishna's form and activities as impure? Acharya Jiva explains that those whose own hearts are impure cannot understand the pure Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further quotes the Lord's own instructions to Arjuna in Sri Hari Vamsa, Tat Paramam Paramam Vama Sarvam Vibhajite Jagat Amaiva Tad Ganam Tejo Yatum Arhasi Bharata. Superior to that, the total material nature, is the Supreme Brahman, from which this entire creation expands. O descendant of Bharata, you should know that the Supreme Brahman consists of my concentrated effulgence. Thus, to save his devotee, Shiva now glorifies the Supreme Lord Krishna, his eternal worshipful master. The Lord's bewildering potency induced Shiva to fight with Lord Krishna, but now the fight is over, and to save his devotee, Lord Shiva offers these beautiful prayers. Oma Jnana Tamarandasya Kananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Nuritam Yena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha. Hare Krishna. So it's a natural sort of course of human activities or activities between jivas, living entities, that when there's some display of prowess, it's followed by some kind of praise. You could say worship. When anybody does anything very extraordinary, even maybe not so extraordinary, people generally say, oh, good job, that was nice. Just like that kirtan we had this morning. It was so nice. I'd want to thank Keshava Prabhu for the kirtan, say, nice job, it was a wonderful kirtan. But it was everybody. I mean, the ladies were dancing, the men were chanting, everyone was enlivened by it. So good job to everyone. And I think that's a natural kind of course of human interaction that there's this type of praise. And so we find it here with Lord Shiva. Krishna has just displayed a great deal of prowess, satisfying Banasura's desire, which we heard of earlier, to fight with someone. He was beating mountains, he was dissatisfied, he was churning the ocean, couldn't find any suitable match. But then he met his match in Krishna, and it was a great display of prowess. And so it's appropriate that Lord Shiva here turns to praise of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. Now, of course, the praise, as described in the purport, is based on the Vedas. The Vedas, and it's described here, the absolute truth is explained confidentially in the Vedas and is therefore difficult for an ordinary reader to understand. For most of us, I would venture to say that understanding the Vedas is very difficult. And even if we do study it and understand it, we really can't get a personal understanding of the personality of Godhead. It's hard to come to that conclusion. Just like if we read the verse here today and the purport, the focus on the is on the absolute truth, but it says here that the Supreme Light, the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Light. Studying the Vedas is hard, and therefore, at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, just before the advent of Kali Yuga, Vyasadeva, just to display his mercy to all the conditioned souls, he wrote the Puranas. He wrote the Puranas. Now, I've heard from our godbrother, His Holiness Bhanu Swami, I don't know Sanskrit, but I heard from him, who does know Sanskrit, that Purana, another meaning of Purana, is to complete. So the Puranas complete the Vedas. They complete the Vedas. And what does that completion mean? It makes it available to all of us here in Kali Yuga that we can have some access to the real purport of Vedic knowledge. And that is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We worship Krishna. Now, Krishna is, of course, not different than the same absolute truth, the supreme light that's being described in this verse today. We know from Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedanti Tat Tat Pavidas Tat Vajyad Jnanamadvayam Brahmeti Paramati Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Sabhyate, that the absolute truth that Lord Shiva is speaking of and the absolute truth that we worship are the same. There's different aspects. Learned transcendentalists who know this absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So we worship Bhagavan, but that's the same person as Lord Shiva is describing here, and with his praise, his due praise. Srimad Bhagavatam also gives us another verse in the same beginning chapters of that work. Ite chamsa kala puncham krishnas tu bhagavan swayam. So we worship Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this form, two hands playing the flute, and worshipped by his great devotees, all following Srimati Radharani. We worship this form of Krishna as the absolute truth. Why? Because the Bhagavatam says, Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam, that after describing all the different incarnations, not all, I mean, there are innumerable incarnations of the Lord, but describing 20, 25 principal incarnations of the Lord in the third chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, then this verse appears, which our acharyas have told us is the Paribhasa Sutra, the central focus and meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. So if we're to understand Bhagavatam, the Puranas, from the Bhagavat Purana, and how that reveals, completes all Vedic knowledge, then our understanding must be grounded in this understanding that Krishna is true Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So why? Why is Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Why do we accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not Vishnu or any other incarnations of the Lord? Well, we do that because Krishna is the most complete form of Godhead. He's the most complete form. And that means that he does things and contains and possesses qualities that even Vishnu forms or other incarnations of the Supreme Lord don't display. I don't say don't have. I say don't display, because it's not like they don't have them, but in the form of Krishna, we get the full expression of the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what are some of those things that Krishna has or displays that other Vishnu forms don't? Krishna comes, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhaviti bharata abhitanam dharmasya tadatmadam sujamiham. He comes and he establishes dharma. He establishes dharma, and he also kills demons. So Krishna does that. Vishnu does that. But what are the four special qualities possessed by Krishna or displayed by Krishna that are not displayed by Lord Vishnu? Can anybody say from the start? A peacock feather. Well, okay. I'm getting partial answers here. Peacock feather is a partial answer. Mother Gautamika? His enchanting flute playing, yes. Venu Madhurya. He plays on his divine flute, thus attracting all souls. Yes, Prabhu. His childhood pastimes. Lila Madhurya. He exhibits in numerous wonderful pastimes for the pleasure of his devotees. So that could be his childhood pastimes, yes. Yes. Rupa Madhuri, yes. His beautiful form is incomparable, unrivaled in all existence. One more, I think. Yes, Mother? Yeah, Bhakta Madhurya. He interacts with loving devotees in intimate ways. These are four special qualities that we don't find displayed in other forms of Godhead. And therefore we worship Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. He's most approachable in this way. When you think about the vision that we get of Lord Krishna described in the verses in his fight with Banasura. He was cutting off Banasura's arms with his razor-sharp chakra, just like the limbs of trees are cut off. Have you ever seen when these workers are like cutting off the limbs of trees with these big machines like that? It's a very violent kind of a vision. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of stuff flying this way and that way. And the buzzers. Imagine Krishna using his chakra fighting with Banasura. Now, how many arms did he leave Banasura with? He left him with four arms. He had 1,000. So there was a lot of blood and bones and flying this way and that way. It was quite a ghastly scene. How approachable is the Lord in such a way? I think we would all hesitate a bit, if we saw that. We want to stand back a bit. We wouldn't want to get too closely involved with the Lord in that way. But compare that form of the Lord, which is the absolute truth, with the peacock feather, with the simple dress of a cowherd, with that enchanting Rupa Madhurya, that beautiful form. Krishna is much more approachable in this way, to engage in loving activities with him as a person, because ultimately the absolute truth, the supreme personality of God, it is a person. And the full display of his personhood, so to speak, is there in his form of Krishna. We worship that Supreme Lord. Now, Krishna's special in other ways, is too, even when he's fighting. He's special. He's distinguished from Vishnu and the other avatars. Does anybody know how he is different from other avatars or Vishnu forms, even when he's fighting and killing? Yes. Great, that's, we're on the right track. He gives grace and mercy. But what is the quality of that grace and mercy he gives that makes him different than Vishnu? He does that. Great compassion, yeah. That's not quite there. He liberates. When he kills, he liberates. This is special to Krishna. When Krishna comes here in this world, he enacts his pastimes. He kills demons. Vishnu also kills demons. The other incarnations, they also kill demons. But what's special about Krishna is that when someone's killed by Krishna, they get liberation. And our acharyas have given us the proof in the descent of Jai and Vijay to this world. Jai and Vijay, they first appeared as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu. And they were killed by Hiranyaksha, by Lord Varaha, Hiranyakasipu, by Lord Nrsimhadev. But when they were killed, they took another birth. Then they took birth as Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Kumbhakarna was killed by Lakshmana Ram. Anybody know? He was killed by Ram. So Ram killed both Kumbhakarna and Ravana. But they took another birth. In their last birth, they took birth as Dantavakra and Shishupal. And Dantavakra and Shishupal were killed by who? Lord Krishna. But then what happened when they were killed? What was so amazing in the assembly there when Lord Krishna threw his chakra and cut off the head of Shishupal? Everyone was amazed. Not that he had a chakra and he could kill him. That's sort of okay. But what was really amazing is his soul, that soul, Shishupal, that stayed there and then merged into the body of Krishna. Is that correct? So he gave them liberation, Dantavakra also. They got liberation. This is special to Krishna. So he's special not only in these four unique qualities he has, but even when he's fighting, he is special. So why does he fight? Why does he fight at all? I mean, he doesn't have to do it to kill demons or to reestablish Dharma. That can be done by somebody else. But why does Krishna fight? I mean, obviously he's good at it. He likes to fight, you know, and he's good at it. So that might be one reason. But why does Krishna fight? Just have fun? Well, he has fun no matter what he does. It's not a question of having fun. He's always blissful. But why does he fight? Why does he do anything? To please his devotees, of course. He fights to please his devotees. And so here we have Krishna fighting with Banasura. Who is he trying to please? Okay, but it goes back a little further than that. Aniruddha, he had a problem. Aniruddha had a problem. He was being held captive. And it is Aniruddha. He had a problem. He was being held captive, but Prahlad was his devotee. There was a family involved there. But basically, if we go back to the beginning of this chapter, we see that, you know, the Yadavas, they were outraged when they found out that Aniruddha was being held captive there, right? And they kind of got together as a family, and they said, wait a minute, you know, he can't do that to our family. You know, we're proud Kshatriya families. And so therefore, all together, we're going to do something about this. And so as a family, they got all their armor and everything like that. And they went to fight. They went to the capital of Banasura to retrieve their son, Aniruddha. Krishna was enjoying this rasa, this rati, this taste of Vira Yuda fighting to please his devotees in the family. They were all there as a unit together. Krishna was reciprocating with them, and he wanted to fight. So I thought that we would just explore Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion a bit about this fighting spirit, so we can understand how Krishna, although fighting, was working to please his devotees. Not working, but enacting his pastimes to please his devotees. Virarasa. Does anybody know the translation that's given in the Nectar of Devotion? Chivalry, yes, chivalry. When the mood of valorous enthusiasm, utsarati, is nourished within the heart of a devotee by appropriate vibhava, etc., it transforms into ecstatic chivalry, vira rasa. When on account of love and devotion, devotional service for the Lord, there is a special valorous enthusiasm, the resultant activities are called chivaras. Now, there are four types of chivalry. And if you have any of this chivalry in your blood, you may recognize or see how they are connected. Chivalrous heroes exhibit Yuda Vira, a spirit for fighting, Dhan Vira, a spirit for giving charity, Daya Vira, a hero performing acts of compassion, and for Dharma Vira, a hero abiding by religious principles. I think in every culture of the world, if you look at their sort of military spirit or their history, you find these various kind of things in them. Giving in charity, a hero acting very compassionately to others, abiding by religious principles. I think if you walk into any martial arts academy that they have on the street teaching young kids, and there's some code that they teach the kids along with the fighting, you know, that there are principles of behavior and honor and things like that. These things are all coming from this chivalrous rasa that we find. It's one of the secondary rasas. You know that there are five primary rasas, which are five primary rasas. Anybody see? Yeah, there are five main, and I think there are 13 secondary. How many? Seven secondary. And this chivalry is one of the secondary ones. Secondary means that the primary rasas are nourished by these things, just like you'll find in many of the descriptions in Nectar of Devotion of this vira rasa involve Krishna's sakya rasa, or his friendship with his cowherd boys. They like to exhibit this this fighting spirit in amongst themselves when they are enjoying their pastimes in the forest of Vrindavan. So, four types of chivalry. Now, if we go over the different elements that are in rasa, vibhava, anubhava, satvika bhava, vyabhachari bhava, and stai bhava, there's a description in a Nectar Devotion of the chivalry in all those four things. Vibhava, which stimulates one's affection, eternal affection for Krishna. Krishna is the object of chivalrous fighting. And he enjoys this in two ways, by fighting and also being a spectator. Who knows one pastime where Krishna was a spectator of a chivalrous exhibition of fighting. Yes, when Jarasandha and Bhima were fighting, Krishna was just a spectator. They went there and they disguised themselves. They were as brahmanas, but Jarasandha could recognize, oh, these are kshatriyas, look at the marks on the shoulder. But then Jarasandha exhibited another one of these bhavas by bragging and saying that, you know, I won't fight with this one. I'm not going to fight with that one. Bhima, I'll fight with him because he's equal to my strength. This is this bragging isn't part of the vibhava. It's a udipana, actually. Well, there's some bragging about one's own abilities that precede the actual fight. And so we see Jarasandha was exhibiting that, that bragging spirit. And Krishna enjoyed watching all of this. So as I said, there's Krishna as the object, directly fighting himself or being a spectator. And then there are these impetuses, these udipanas, there are impetuses for the fighting spirit, such as bragging, pride, power, taking weapons, challenging and standing as an opponent. All these things you see, like many times when Krishna was fighting. There was one person Krishna was fighting, and he was bragging, and Krishna said, don't brag, don't talk so much. Heroes show their prowess by actually fighting. And so they were exchanging these are emotions or feelings or elements of the rasa that are taking place between Krishna and them. And in that case, another one, when Jarasandha was, not Jarasandha, but who was it that Krishna was running away from? Krishna was running away from? Huh? Yeah, well, he was fighting Jarasandha, then Kalyanavana came there, and then Krishna decided to leave. But someone was telling him, no, stand and fight. Why are you running away? Stand and fight. This is one of these things mentioned here as an udipana, standing as an opponent. So they were saying like that. Anubhavas, which result from the heightened affection of vibhava. So some of the things in this regard are enthusiasm in fighting, roaring like a lion, being enthusiastic to fight in spite of being alone. Who did that? Who displayed that, being anxious to fight despite being alone? Dantavakra? Okay, yeah, but I'm thinking of what Aniruddha, Krishna's son. He entered the chakra, right? That's Abhimanyu. Abhimanyu, and he was alone, and he was surrounded by these, but he didn't like say, oh, these guys are, there's five of them, I better get out of here. He said, no, he stood and fight. He said, no, I'll fight you all. I can defeat all of you. It doesn't matter to me. So he went into the chakra, the trap that they had set for him. So that's an exhibition of this anubhava, ecstasy following once the spirit has been aroused. And bragging also comes there. Then there's sattvika bhavas and vyabhachari bhavas. And then there are sthayi bhavas, or sort of a permanent or continuous ecstasy, Prabhupada says. And it's interesting, there are four ways that the sthayi bhava manifestation of this yuddha-vira-rasa are manifest. One fights by himself after being challenged by an opponent. One fights by himself and he starts the fight. One fights in a team after being challenged by an opponent or encouraged by an ally. And one fights in a team and he starts the fight. So here in this fight, if we go back to the beginning of the chapter, this fighting as a team becomes relevant because, as I mentioned, the family's got upset. Let me just read the chapter summary where that's described. said, when they finally heard from Narada Muni how Aniruddha had been captured, a large army of the best Yadava warriors under Krishna's protection set off for Banasura's capital and laid siege to it. So they, as a family, fought against Banasura. This same kind of as a family pride kind of thing was also seen in when one of the other sons got kidnapped because he was after a girl. When Samba was arrested by their friends, the Kauravas, they were friends, not necessarily like Banasura, he was a demon. But the Kauravas, and I think that Yudhisthira was visiting them at that time. And so when they heard that Samba was being restrained by them, they became outraged again, and they all wanted to go and fight, but they sent Lord Balaram as an emissary, and he alone was enough to settle the situation. But this idea of the family pride being diminished by other kings is an impetus to this fighting spirit. So those are some thoughts that I had on this verse. Anybody have any comments or questions? Jamastin? No?
Like you're asking me to Sindhu Mangala Charanam, there's the Vastu Nirdesh. That's the objective of the Vaishrasamita Sindhu. Rupa Goswami defines it as Akila Rasamita Murti, that Krishna is he's the objective, but he's the embodiment of all rasas. So I'm a little, I guess maybe it's somewhat, and this differentiates him. The commentary is that this is a differentiation between other Vishnu Tathas. I'm a little surprised that that's not included in those four items, you know, where it's different from other.
I don't know that it's not included. We have to see what our acharyas have said about that and try to understand how they see it as included or as they see it being separate. I don't know. One point I wanted to make also is that, what was it? I just thought of it. Anyway, I'll maybe I'll come back to you. Krishna Manu. Ramanya.
Well, very nice lecture, Sesha Prabhu. So what category you have Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when exhibit the Sudarshan Chakra and Lord Nityananda?
What category? The Lord is again, motivated to protect his devotees. When he sees his devotees put in danger, even as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came simply to rescue the demons, to do that, but his devotees are so dear to him that even that he was ready to break. And Lord Nityananda Prabhu said, no, don't kill them with your chakra, Jagai and Madai. I mean, you've come to give mercy unconditionally. And so don't kill them like this. And so, but he was prepared to do because his devotees are so dear to him. Yes, ma'am.
Lord Krishna maybe is more kind than Lord Vishnu because by killing them, he liberated them. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu liberated them without even killing them.
Yes, yes. And, thank you. Anything else you want to add? Yes, Kira Dambhavan.
But then the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada states that because the propensity to fight is within Krishna, then all of us fight sometimes. We fight on Krishna.
Sometimes?
Because that propensity... That propensity is there. That fighting propensity is coming from Krishna.
Yeah, there's one thing about this pastime with Lord fighting with Banasura that indicates Banasura's misfortune. What is Banasura's misfortune in his fight with Krishna? Yeah, that Krishna didn't kill him. He didn't kill him. He left him with four arms. He was a devotee of Lord Shiva, and so he didn't kill him. So that's not, he didn't get to full mercy. Hi, bro. You have a question? This is Sesha Das. Well, Vishnu kills everyone in Krishna Leela. Krishna doesn't kill demons. Okay, well, this is a little bit of a complicated question. I think that this is too much for me to repeat and try to answer here, you know, sitting with all these devotees. So we'll have to talk about that separately. Is that okay? I mean, it's kind of awkward here. We'll talk about it. I'll call you.
All right. First of all, this is the most interesting Bhagavatam class thus far. Yeah, but also, the case of Jai and Vijay, there's some speciality with them. So sometimes Vishnu does actually give liberation if he kills somebody, but in all cases it's not there. And Jiva Goswami cited this example to bring out how merciful Krishna is, that even a demon like Putana, anyone else, he will give them liberation. This is his...
How did you know the question she was answering?
Oh, really?
She's asking that question.
Yeah, so sometimes Vishnu will give, sometimes not. But in the case of Jai and Vijay, there's some speciality in that they particularly came in order to satisfy Vyaras for Lord Narayan. They used to be at the gate. There's 10 gates in Vaikuntha. On the western gate, it is Jai and Vijay, and Jiva Goswami says they're the favorites of Lord Narayan. This is why even when Lakshmi Devi cursed them the first time, she thought about it, and she did not pronounce any time period or when it had to happen, because he says she considered, oh, wait a minute, I should be careful. These are the favorites of Narayan. Should be careful. Later on, Narayan himself said, you can either go 7 times as devotees based on Lakshmi's curse or 3 times as demons. Because they understood the inner desire of the Lord, and like you said, because they themselves, they used to stand at the gate and talk. You know, in Vaikuntha, there's no king. I know if we're so powerful, how powerful Narayan must be, but we've never seen it displayed. Because Narayan understood their desire, they mutually, by heart, agreed to come here. And Krishna Sandarbha, it's written there. So it says, Jaya Vijay Sona Kori, that to experience Viraras, a Sapvyajema means the pretense of a curse was given so that they could come here and fight. Now, the real special thing is that they satisfied the Lord so much, just as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, after that, the actual taste of Viraras was not prominent in Ram or Krishna Leela. In Ram's Leela, what became prominent was the pastime with Mother Sita and his separation from Mother Sita, his friendship with Vibhishan and others, and Hanuman's Dasharas, these became prominent. In Krishna Leela, killing Shishupal only took half a second. Done. So no Viras, really big thing there. But the big thing is that to allow them those 3 births was really rewarded, because then they came as Jagai and Madai in Gaur Leela. So then they not only got the position back in Vaikuntha, but they were actually able to taste the highest type of frame due to the extreme mercy of Nityananda and Mahaprabhu. So for that reason, better not to be killed to wait and come in Gaur Lila for this purpose. So very wonderful thing about Jayan Vijay in particular.
Thank you very much. So we're about at 9, so we'll end there. Prantarashimad Bhagavatam.